support independent community radio KPFK. I'm David Barsamyan of Alternative Radio. Thanks very much for your support.
KPFK, Los Angeles.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Well, good afternoon, friends. Good afternoon, and welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm your host, Jim Lafferty, along with my friend and co-host, Maria Hall, welcoming you to this week's show. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Jim.
I'm a little nervous we don't have our guest yet.
Oh, he's fine. I just sent him the link.
Okay, good.
But in the meantime,
Live radio is always nerve-wracking. I know, live radio. Well, tell us what our listeners have in store for them today, Maria.
Yes, well, in the meantime, yes, we'll be speaking with constitutional scholar Stephen Rohde about the latest court cases impacting our constitutional rights, from government search of border phones to visa restrictions and more. Then we'll be joined by attorney Adam Reese from CHIRLA and Sophia Wrench from Public Counsel for an update on local immigration enforcement and the community's efforts to hold the government accountable for civil rights abuses.
Yeah, and that's an ongoing fight. And a lot of national stuff has been in the press about it, but there's been precious little about what's going on here in LA. And it's a sad story, but a great fight back effort is going on. Well, as Maria just indicated, today we're going to once again review some of the legal and political developments relative to the Trump administration. And once again, when we do that, of course, our guest will be constitutional law expert Steve Rohde. Steve Rohde is a former chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California. He's the author of two books and numerous articles on the courts and the law. And there he is, Steve Rohde. A warm welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show.
Well, thank you very much, Jim and Maria. It's great to be with you.
All right, let's get right into it. Because I want to remind our listeners that we're also in our spring, summer now, really, fun drive here at KPFK. We're not going to spend a lot of time during the show talking about it, but we're going to spend some time doing it. We'd like to not have to spend any time at all. We'd like to simply be able to say, fun drive, and you all start calling us up and making your pledges. If you want to do that, and indeed, the more people who do that early on in the show, the less time we do have to spend. The number, of course, is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. So give us a call. You can listen to the show and give us a call and talk about what premium you want, or go to the website at kpfk.org and pick out from a long list of ways we say thank you when you pledge. But now let's get into the substance of our show today. Let's start this way, Steve. An appeals court has overturned a lower court's release order for a foreign student arrested in Vermont. Tell us what this case is all about.
Well, a theme is going to emerge today. Yeah. And so many of these cases are driven by the Trump administration's efforts to silence pro-Palestinian free speech. And it just keeps coming up in multiple ways across the legal spectrum. And akin to that is the punishment of undocumented individuals seeking asylum and citizenship in the United States. These are the strongest themes we're seeing. So we're starting with a disappointing ruling by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, reversing a lower court order that had required the release of pro-Palestinian activist Mohsen Mahdawi. It opens the door for his rearrest. He was a student protester organizing that Trump has focused on. This overturns a previous decision by a federal judge in Vermont, which likened the government's efforts to expel Madawi to McCarthyism. But unfortunately, a three-judge panel, appellate panel, found that the lower court judge had overstepped his authority in intervening in Madawi's case before it had moved fully through the immigration court system. The ruling mirrors a separate appellate decision earlier this year against Mahmoud Khalil, who is also a classmate of Madawi's at Columbia University. Now, this was not a final ruling on the merits. It's not the end of the line. These appellate courts are elevating the administrative immigration court system. A court system is a misnomer. The immigration legal system is part of the executive branch. And those immigration judges are supervised by members of Trump's administration. So in many ways, that's a show court. And it's only when these cases get into the independent federal courts that we're going to see some justice. Madawi and Khalil are claiming that they're being unconstitutionally targeted for criticizing Israel. Madawi, 35, is separately appealing his removal. Attorneys for the American Civil Liberties Union, which represents Madawi, said Tuesday that the government could not detain or deport his client as the appeals process go through. Madawi was born in a refugee camp in the Israeli-occupied West Bank and became a legal permanent resident of the United States in 2015. But he was arrested by immigration agents during a citizenship interview in April of 2025. The man was going to his interview to become a citizen, and he was arrested as part of Trump's sweeping efforts to expel non-citizens who criticize Israel and protest against the war in Gaza. Stay tuned. We will be following this case very closely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, on a happier note, a U.S. federal judge has ruled that the border phone searches of a Palestinian American violated the Fourth Amendment. Talk to us about the facts and the ruling in this case.
Yes, and this continues my overarching theme for today. U.S. District Judge Michael Nachmanoff of the Eastern District of Virginia issued a ruling from after a bench trial. A bench trial is a trial in front of a judge without a jury. This all involves Osama Abdul Irshad, the executive director of American Muslims for Palestine. And he was searched. His cell phones were searched twice at a U.S. international airport in 2024. He is a U.S. citizen, and he sued the government after the customs officer subjected his phones to forensic searches upon his return to the country. At that time, Irshad was carrying two cell phones, offered one of his phones for the officers to search, and one of the officers at the scene said, "People who are traveling with burner phones are trying to hide something." Well, the court found that among the factors the officers were using in requesting approval for the forensic search was a May 2024 letter from Congressman James Comer of the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. Comer, a Republican, had alleged misconduct by American Muslims for Palestine, as well as alleged financial ties to Hamas. The court found that letter from this congressman, along with other information, did not amount to the reasonable suspicion required to justify a non-routine forensic search of a U.S. citizen's phone. The judge wrote that the evidence connected Irshad to any national security concern was too attenuated to justify the searches. The court has ordered both sides to submit a briefing within 21 days on the question of appropriate remedies. This is simply one more case of the courts and good lawyers fighting back, and I'm very hopeful for the future of this case.
Ah, looks like we lost Jim. But let's just go on. I'm sure he'll be right back. So, Steve, a judge has dismissed a U.S. Justice Department challenge to the immigration laws of Minnesota. Talk to us about this case.
This is very encouraging. Before the Trump administration sent thousands of immigration agents to Minnesota, and your listeners know all of the cruel history of that, the Trump administration sued Minnesota over rules that strictly limit cooperation with federal authorities seeking to deport people. The prohibitions include limits on the police asking about immigration status and bans on coordinating with ICE. Well, on July 20, a judge nominated by President Trump sided with the state of Minnesota, throwing Trump's case out of court. The judge, Eric Tostrud of the U.S. District Court in Minnesota, said the state and local laws challenged by the Trump administration did not impinge on federal authority, as the Justice Department had argued. The judge wrote, "They do not command the federal government or its contractors to act. They do not forbid the federal government or its contractors from acting. They do not control how federal government or its contractors undertake their work. Rather, they regulate how state and local officials perform their duties." Justice departments didn't comment immediately. The Trump administration has filed similar lawsuits against other Democratic-led jurisdictions across the country, trying to impinge on those state laws. A case against Illinois officials was dismissed last year. Federal officials opposed state and local laws, including measures in Minneapolis and St. Paul that restrict local police from asking about a person's immigration status, as well as a sheriff's policy of not coordinating with ICE. The Trump administration sought to invalidate a legal opinion from Minnesota's attorney general that said county jails cannot hold people wanted by immigration officials longer than they would otherwise be in custody. And during the deportation campaign in that state, the president and his allies accused Minnesota Democrats of subverting federal authority by not cooperating. Well, this judge found that was false, rejected the Trump lawsuit. That's good news, but I'm sure that will go up on appeal.
Well, Steve, the Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil has sued Stephen Miller, the Secretary of State, Rubio, the Heritage Foundation, and others. He sued them for conspiracy to persecute him. What is the basis of his case, and is it a strong case, do you think?
I think it's a very strong case. It falls into a newer category, not just defending against what Trump is doing or fighting Trump's lawsuits. Mahmoud Khalil on July 14 sued senior Trump administration officials and three anti-Palestinian private organizations for conspiring to deprive him of his constitutional rights. This goes back, and they cite the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. That act directly goes to private parties and government parties who conspire to deny individuals their constitutional rights. I think that law is tailor-made for this era, and I think Khalil is making out a strong case. His lawsuit alleges that the conspirators sought to terrorize and make an example of Mahmoud Khalil and other non-citizen Palestinian rights advocates in an effort to intimidate and weaken the growing movement for Palestinian solidarity. The case has been filed against the private Heritage Foundation, famous for Project 2025, Canary Mission, and Betar, which are pro-Israel groups that purport to expose Palestinian activists. Senior presidential advisor Stephen Miller, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Homeland Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, and several acting Attorney General Todd Blanche and others. The suit was filed by the really extraordinary Center for Constitutional Rights, which has been doing extraordinary work and which was in part founded by the wonderful lawyer Michael Ratner, and also the private law firm of Meldock, Levine, and Hoffman. It emerges a year after federal agents abducted Khalil and amid the government's continuing efforts to deport him in retaliation for his role in protests at Columbia University against Israel and U.S.-enabled genocide in Gaza. The Heritage Foundation published Project Esther, a blueprint to dismantle the burgeoning U.S.-Palestinian solidarity movement by conflating criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism and support for terrorism. The Project Esther itself said their plan, their conspiracy, was to leverage a willing administration into a public-private partnership with other anti-Palestinian groups. Well, they're saying the quiet part out loud. Their very announcements are elements of conspiracy, and that's what this lawsuit is doing. They include a series of specific allegations and evidence of that conspiracy, which has been taking place in plain sight. I think this is a strong lawsuit. It's based on a solid statute and a wealth of evidence to prove that conspiracy. And we're going to be tracking this civil lawsuit as it moves through the courts.
Well, before we get to, there's some much more important stuff coming, friends, so don't go away, but let us take a deep breath for a few minutes here. This is radio I suggest you don't hear anywhere else. And I could go through the programming here at KPFK from morning till night and point out any number of programs, especially our public affairs shows, but other shows as well, where you hear programming, where you hear the voices of activists and others that you just don't hear anywhere else. This is really not only radio for the people, it's the people's radio. And you are what make this possible, and only you make it possible. We get no government funds, of course. We don't take any money from private corporations that are public profit-making corporations. You know, the Red Cross or somebody we may have an announcement for. And so it's just you and me. 99% of the programming you hear is done by volunteer programmers like Maria and myself. Our staff is underpaid, that's for sure. They could get better jobs elsewhere, but they believe in the station. We like to think that our listeners believe in this station too, which is why you listen week after week to the Lawyers Guild show and other wonderful programs here at KPFK. We'd like to suggest, therefore, today something that you consider. We want you to consider making a pledge that is a monthly pledge, if you will, in a sense. It's $25 a month. What is that a year? I mean, it comes up to a couple of hundred and some dollars, but it's not the sort of thing that's beyond the reach we know of many, many of you. There are some who are out of work, who are students just struggling to get through school. We don't expect you to be able to do this. But we know that we have a lot of folks who are regular listeners of this station, and I would add of this show, who can well afford $25 a month. It's not that much money for those people at all. And we urge you to become one of our most valued contributors by pledging that $25 a month, if you would, to KPFK. We have other ways of saying thank you as well. We like to think that we don't offer a premium for the $25 a month program necessarily, although you will get certain announcements and you will hear certain things and be able to take advantage of certain things that people who haven't joined that exclusive club can't do. But in terms of specific premiums, we like to think that it's the station that's the premium, if you will. It's the daily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unique programming you hear here on KPFK that makes you want to do this. We know we're the voice of the movement, as we say, the voice of the progressive movement here in Los Angeles. We're really its radio station. It brings you the progressive voice, the humanistic voice, you will, if the people of Los Angeles. It does that in a sea of commercial radio and right-wing radio that is dominant in the country. It is a small but critically important voice for the movements here in Los Angeles. So we urge you to show and demonstrate your support by indeed joining us as one of those $25 a month supporters, if you will. Maria, there's also some ways people can thank us that are a little less money than that, and that we have some premiums for, specific premiums for.
Yes, well, just briefly, and if I can make a friendly amendment to what you just said, Jim, in that the monthly sustainers actually are eligible for premiums.
Oh.
So depending on the annual gift that it adds up to, you can be eligible. And my favorite one, this fund drive is called, it's a book called Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News by Alec Karakatsanis. We'll read an excerpt later in the program. It's fabulous, and that's for a donation of $100 or more. That's a thank you gift for that. So go to kpfk.org or just give us a call at 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, and let us all know that you appreciate independent media that's not paid for by all of these multi-mega international national corporations.
Yes.
All right, let's go on to our next question for Mr. Rohde.
Well, Steve, go ahead, please, Maria.
Oh, sure. I was on a roll. Steve, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has announced the imposition of a visa restriction policy. It's a visa restriction policy targeting members of the so-called far left terrorist groups, quote unquote. What is the new policy and who are these alleged terrorist groups?
Well, this is what a fascist government does. When they have control, when they have the levers of power and various statutes on the books at their disposal, they use them. On July 16, Marco Rubio announced a new visa restriction policy. It bars foreign nationals affiliated and those affiliated as far-left terrorists. That's the phrasing of the policy, and prohibits them from entering the United States. This, of course, would impair the ability of organizing, of information, of speakers, and all the rest coming into the United States to help inform the American people about a true picture of what the United States is doing around the world. This new policy targets foreign nationals who have engaged in or provided material support to, quote, acts of terrorism, which they define as violent crime, economic sabotage, or assisting far-left networks with any of these acts. It's issued under a section of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which is on the books, which authorizes the Secretary of State to deny entry to foreign nationals that the Secretary reasonably believes can have, quote, potentially serious adverse foreign policy consequences, unquote, for the United States. I mean, what's important is that's the kind of dangerous, broad, undefined language that sits on the shelf in American statutes, and it's obviously needs to be a target of reform and amendment when the people take control. The State Department's press release in it announced that Rubio described far-left terrorist groups as using, quote, sophisticated organized networks to perpetrate violence as a political tool, employing, quote, bombings, assassination, and other forms of terrorism. Keep that thought in mind. To silence speech. This is Rubio, that the terrorist groups are silencing speech limiting political opposition, change policy outcomes, and sabotage political processes. Well, whenever you look at what this administration or any authoritarian administration does, always read what comes after the word "and" in a list which begins with scary words like violence and bombings, because it's not limited to violence, bombings, and assassination, or other forms of terrorism, which Marco Rubio and the administration can then go off and define as they see fit. This State Department said the policy is being implemented in support of National Security Presidential Memorandum 7. We've talked about that memorandum before. It is a dangerous, broad declaration that is demonizing Antifa, that demonizes any form of criticism and attack on U.S. foreign policy, all of which, of course, is protected by the First Amendment. This is directed at federal agencies and empowers them to investigate and disrupt, quote, networks engaged in, quote, domestic terrorism, unquote, and organized political violence and other acts as part of a broader effort to disrupt these far-left networks before further escalation. This policy is dangerous. I anticipate that one or more legal challenges will be mounted against it in the near future.
Well, Steve, The Nation magazine has an article, a recent article of The Nation, entitled "Francesca Albanese Won't Back Down." Now, Ms. Albanese is the UN's special rapporteur on occupied Palestinian territories on genocide. Tell us about her and about the article in The Nation.
Yes, and I wanted to end with Francesca Albanese. She is a heroine of mine. She is a figure that we all should know as a household word. In 2022, she was appointed, as you say, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories for a three-year term. In October of that year, she recommended in her first report to the UN that member states develop a plan to end the Israeli settler colonial occupation and apartheid regime. In 2023, the following year, at a UN meeting, she presented a report accusing Israel of turning the West Bank into a, quote, open-air prison. The report said that since 1967, more than 800,000 Palestinians, including children as young as 12, had been arrested and detained by Israeli authorities. Fortunately, she was confirmed in her position for another three-year term beginning April 2025. On March 26, 2024, she presented her report, Anatomy of a Genocide, to the UN Human Rights Council, finding reasonable grounds to believe that Israel is intentionally committing at least three genocidal acts against the Palestinians as a group in Gaza that are prohibited under the Genocide Convention. One, killing members of the group. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. And three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Well, that was a bold statement. It was an early declaration of genocide. It's been followed by many other international human rights groups. In February 2023, even before that report, 18 members of Congress called for Albanese to be removed from her position. And UN ambassador appointed by Trump, Linda Thomas Greenfield, posted on X that Albanese was unfit for her role. The United Nations should not tolerate anti-Semitism from a UN-affiliated official hired to promote human rights. You immediately see the conflation of criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. But Albanese has been strong throughout this, as the Nation article indicates. In response, she said, Anti-Semitism and discrimination against Jews as Jews is gross, but frankly, I don't care less if Israel were run by Jews, Muslims, Christians, or atheists. All I want is for Israel to conduct itself in line with international law. Mm-hmm. A group of 65 scholars of anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, and Jewish studies came to her defense following that statement. In July of 2025, the U.S. Department of Treasury, under Trump, imposed sanctions on Albanese under Executive Order 14203, naming her a specially designated national, forbidding all U.S. persons and companies from doing business with her except as necessary to wind down their transactions. Sadly, Georgetown University in December of 25 said that Albanese was no longer an affiliate scholar in compliance with that sanction. Well, the good news is that in May 2026, U.S. District Judge Richard Leone blocked the sanctions against Albanese, ruling that they violated her First Amendment rights. Unfortunately, the same month, the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, in a short order, granted the Trump administration's motion for an administrative stay of Leone's order blocking the sanctions. That is being litigated currently. I've been reading the briefs and amicus briefs that are being filed on behalf of Albanese. She has a very strong case, and I hope the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit sees it that way. I think, as we've seen today, in so many different ways, this administration is doing its damnedest to clamp down on anyone who speaks truth to power as far as Israel and Palestine are concerned. Luckily, the courts in large part are fighting against that.
Yes. Well, Steve, thank you very much. Once again, you've done a wonderful job of bringing a lot of information in a short period of time to our listeners. And we truly thank you for that, Steve Rohde. We're going to take now a brief station ID break, and then we're going to be right back with you, my friends. Don't go away.
Well, you can't just get what you want without a little work a day. And you can't just stick out your hand. No, it doesn't work that way. Yeah, it's gonna be a long one. I'll be working all night long. Oh, it's gonna be a long one. But I'm paying my way.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support KPFK. One of the best ways you can do it is simply by becoming a sustainer, pledging $10 or more each month. In that way, you help to protect this independent radio station. And sign up today.
You can join KPFK's sustainer program by logging on to kpfk.org.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. You're listening to Radical Free Speech Radio, KPFK, in Los Angeles.
Well, my friends, we are right back with you as promised. You're listening to the Warriors Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with Maria Helm, the co-host. And now we're going to look at the question of immigration enforcement. We know what a pain that is and how many laws are violated in that regard, and a good fight back effort against it. Maria, introduce our guest for this topic.
Yes, thanks, Jim. Well, yes, briefly, while major immigration stories continue to make national headlines, much of the daily enforcement happening here in Los Angeles goes unnoticed by local media, except stations like KPFK. And from government threats against community groups to lawsuits over dangerous detention centers, federal actions are still deeply impacting local families and our communities here in Southern California every day. So today we're looking at what's really happening on the ground in Los Angeles, how legal advocates are fighting back, and where you can find trusted legal help for you and your community. We are so grateful today to have with us two expert attorneys on this subject. attorney Adam Rees from Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, or CHIRLA, and Sophia Wrench, a staff attorney for policy and strategic litigation at the pro bono law firm Public Counsel. Adam and Sophia, welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Well, it's been over a year now since last June, since Trump's DHS and ICE shock and awe immigration enforcement and raids dominated headlines here. What should listeners know about enforcement locally now that doesn't always make the headlines? I know we see a lot going on nationally, but what's going on out there on the streets in LA and in Southern California?
Yeah, Maria, everyone has to remain vigilant. People are getting picked up in various places, at the airport, in the streets, at their ICE check-ins, while traveling in other states. Immigrant neighborhoods are being targeted. Families are still being separated. Sometimes ICE is not also seeing an individual's full immigration record when they do have legal status. They might have an employment authorization document or an in-process asylum application, but they're still being detained. And then their lawyers have to get them out, even when they should have never been in detention in the first place. Each of the hyper-public incidents in the news taught ICE that they can be more effective if they fly under the radar. So anecdotally, we've heard of things like more female officers being deployed and using scams like, quote, I need help with my car at a Home Depot parking lot, because that's not what people expect ICE to be doing. We know that ICE is targeting people based on their apparent race and accent. And it's moments when ICE is not in the news that don't mean that the suffering or fear has diminished at all. The work of advocacy is more important than ever. Organizations like Public Counsel and CHIRLA doing the work of deportation defense are underwater. The need is enormous. And so people who need to be getting a lawyer and a legal consultation ahead of time, make family plans, arrange for your children's care and your assets in the event that you are detained.
You know, I just want to jump in and reiterate some of what my colleague Sophia was saying, that a lot of these changes in tactics that we're seeing since the extremely high profile raids of you know, about this time last year, really do shift things in such a way that the detentions are still going on at a high rate, but in a much less visible way. For example, my colleague mentioned people being detained at ICE check-ins. We are still seeing, you know, unlawful use of racial profiling. We're seeing people being arrested without warrants in ways that strongly, strongly suggest that they've been racially profiled. But, you know, it's being done in a way that generates fewer headlines. The tactics have also shifted in terms of placing other kinds of pressure on people to leave the country under duress, but not necessarily via outright force. So one tactic that we've seen is issuing these civil fines. People who were subjected to a final removal order many years ago are receiving letters that they owe money, you know, a fine of up to $1.8 million, which, you know, many of these fines are just plainly illegal. And if the people who are receiving these letters stand up and assert their right to not have to pay the fine, they will not be forced to pay it. That's not to say to ignore the letter, but to stand up and assert that you're not paying it. But sadly, what we're seeing is, you know, because these letters also say if you leave the country, the fine will be forgiven. But again, it's a bogus fine. So we're, you know, seeing people taking steps towards possibly leaving the country because they've basically been tricked into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, I also wanted to ask you this. We've seen the Trump administration now openly retaliate against people and groups that fight back, that don't agree with ICE's policy and say so and so on. Tell us about some of the threats the Trump administration, for example, has made to CHIRLA and how that community is responding.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. To name a couple of the attacks that we faced as an organization, one was targeting the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Now, this is a program that allows nonprofits like us to attract and retain talented staff including the lawyers that we use to fight people's immigration cases. Trump wanted to weaponize this program so that social justice organizations like ours would lose access to it, and only entities whose work Trump approves of or whose work Trump likes would continue to receive this benefit. So we got together with a bunch of other organizations and even some city governments. It was a very sort of diverse suit. And we sued and we won this case. The judge gave us an order the day before the rule was set to go into effect. So it never officially went into effect. But that was one attack that we successfully fought off. Mm-hmm. They also refused to pay out some money that they owed us. There was an agreement between Chitla and the Biden administration that we would receive some funding in order to help people become citizens. And when Trump came into office, his administration decided not to send some funding that was, you know, remaining in that grant. So we sued. And while we have not gotten the money that we're owed, we're continuing to stay involved in this litigation because we think that through the discovery process, we can help bring to light some of the opaque practices that this administration has engaged in as it targets social justice nonprofits. And so ultimately, I would say, you know, we're not cowed by these types of attacks. We have every intention of continuing to fight against this administration's racist attacks on our immigrant communities and, you know, attacks ultimately on the very fabric of this country.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Well, I want to talk about or ask you a question, both of you, about some offense, being on the offense instead of just being on the defense, which is what we've been talking about so far. So on July 17th, about 2 weeks ago, ICE temporarily closed its downtown LA detention center. And according to a press release from Congress member Jimmy Gomez's office, they described making a surprise visit and finding very harsh conditions. And then it was closed shortly thereafter. Now, I know you're both involved, both of your law firms are involved in a lawsuit called LT versus ICE, which is challenging harsh conditions at Adelanto Detention Center, which is out in the desert, in the Mojave Desert. So tell us about the lawsuit, why you filed it, and then, of course, how it's going, what are next steps?
Yeah, LTV ICE is a class action lawsuit that challenges the conditions of confinement at Adelanto. Adelanto is a chronically overpopulated and understaffed detention center, which has led to atrocious conditions. This is on purpose. We know that this administration intends immigration detention to be so miserable that the people inside want to self-deport, even if they have legal options to stay. So our lawsuit aims to improve the sanitation, food, water, medical care, and disability care for all 1,500 people detained there now and in the future. And most recently, we had a win. The judge ordered the facility to immediately provide 24-hour access to clean water, enough calories in the meals, clean the facility daily, remediate the mold, and allow loved ones to visit who are visiting to be allowed to hug. This is huge. It means that the detained people who have their loved ones visit can hug their children throughout their visits, which wasn't allowed before. By the end of this month, the court's order also means that we will be hearing from the government about a plan to fix the broken medical and disability access systems, and the court will be appointing independent monitors who then report back to the court monthly about these conditions, and those monitors will have full and independent access to the facility, all the people detained there, all medical records, all staff. And if and when the conditions do not improve, we will see the government back in court.
Excellent, excellent. Well,
and I'm sorry if I could jump in. I sure. wanted to add a couple stories of some of the people who you know are referred to in our declarations in this case to give some color to the public to understand really how kind of horrific the conditions are in Adelanto and you know in other immigrant detention facilities like it. One issue that my colleague Sophia mentioned is the food. The food, you know, has often been served in quantities that are not really sufficient in terms of the number of calories to sustain a person the way that, you know, our bodies need nutrition. In many cases, it's food that has very little nutritional value. In many cases, people have been served food that's raw, like uncooked. In many cases, people have been served spoiled food and then have gotten gastrointestinal infections as a result of consuming it. You know, we've been in contact with people who end up, you know, even though the food they're given is inadequate in the first place, end up leaving lots of it on the plate because they're afraid of getting some kind of food poisoning event. And even in the best case scenario, a lot of the food will be served mixed together. So you may have beans and salad and a piece of cake and a meat croquette of some kind of meat that you maybe can't tell what animal it comes from. And these things would all be sort of jumbled together and whatever liquids there are would be absorbed everywhere. Mm-hmm. We also have a member of our organization of Chedla, who fortunately is no longer in Adelanto, but when he was there, he had a filling fallout of two different teeth, and he was in quite a bit of pain. As you know, dental pain can be quite severe. And when he asked for an appointment to get the filling put back in, he was told that people only get dental procedures after they've been there for 6 months. And so he would need to hang around for 6 months and then ask again. This individual ended up being detained for over 9 months, and at no point was the filling replaced in those 9+ months. Finally, we have another member who thankfully is no longer detained at Adelanto, who's a diabetes patient and has very specific needs in terms of the kind of food that he eats, that it should be medically appropriate for his condition. They basically made almost no efforts to accommodate him. And so the symptoms of his diabetes were worsening significantly throughout the time that he was in detention. And, you know, many, many months out of detention, I'm talking about like more than half a year out of detention, he was still struggling to regain weight that he had lost in detention. And he was also waking up at odd hours of the night because of, you know, what he described as kind of the stress or trauma of having had to live in that place for a period of time.
Indeed. Well, let's talk about ICE agents for a bit. Last week, a group of 39 U.S. senators demanded answers from ICE after agents had shot and killed two more unarmed people in public spaces, and at least one of the shooters had a violent history before ICE even hired him. What more can elected officials do to protect the public from the violence by the government? I mean, these are elected officials of the government. It's their own government that's committing these crimes. What can they do? And how can listeners encourage them to do the right thing?
Yeah, elected officials need to stop funding ICE. ICE has proven themselves untrustworthy. The officers are not properly trained. It's wreaking havoc and violence on our communities. Congress needs to do its job and pass comprehensive immigration reforms. It's about giving a really inhumane immigration system humanity. Right now, we have a breakdown of the separation of powers. The executive is gaining power, and Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court is enabling it. Congress needs to restore the balance of power between our three branches. Things that would help: universal representation in immigration court. Right now, we have children who don't speak English self-representing in their immigration hearings. They need to restore TPS. They need to create a meaningful asylum system, restore humanitarian protections for survivors of violence. These are the bare minimums, and a lot needs to be done to provide pathways to citizenship and to rectify past harms. We also need to say, Trump 2.0, what we're experiencing right now, is far worse than Trump 1.0. We need everyone to step up and do their part. Let your voice be known. Contact your elected officials. There's mutual aid groups to help people. You can join a rapid response group. Talk to your neighbors. Everyone needs to manage their burnout, fill their own cup, but stay engaged in your community. And it's so important, if you can, to keep giving money to organizations that are doing the work, like Chirla and Public Counsel. Our teams have trained for years to confront these issues. There's always more work to be done, and every single immigration organization is at low capacity. So give what you can and do what you can do to expand our work so that more people can be served.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes.
And I wanted to just respond briefly to that question as well. There's a bill in the California State Senate that would disqualify people from becoming local or state police officers if they personally participated in federal immigration enforcement during Trump's second term, including being ICE agents. So this sends the right kind of signal to counteract, you know, the terrible signals that Congress has been sending and throwing so many billions of dollars at this cruel and racist mass deportation machine. But ultimately, as my colleague said, ICE's mass deportation machine should have never been funded in the first place. And, you know, there are these other things that Congress can do to try and at least limit some of the damage, like creating pathways to citizenship. Along those lines, I just wanted to plug one particular legislative avenue towards creating a pathway to citizenship. There's a law that's almost a century old called the Registry Law. And this law, it points at a particular date where anyone that entered the U.S. prior to that date and who meets certain basic moral character requirements may apply for a green card. The current date is set to 1972, but Congress could act anytime it wants to update this date to a much more recent year, which would make millions of people eligible for permanent residency and eventually for citizenship. I can leave it there.
No, that's good. I didn't know about that. And I dare say our listeners didn't either. Maria, last thoughts?
Yes. No, I definitely wanted to get the information about where listeners can find reliable information about either finding out legal support, where they could find legal support, or just whatever the real news is, and where can they find more information about you and your work, and maybe just one note about how you stay courageous.
Yeah, so CIRLA actually has a hotline called the CIRLA Immigrant Assistance Hotline, which can be reached for people who have questions about their own legal issues or a family member's legal issues at 888-6-CIRLA, which is 888-624-4752. Also, CIRLA is a membership organization, and by becoming a member, you'll be put on a mailing list where you'll get information that will keep you up to date on the latest of what's happening in the immigration space. You'll also learn about concerts that are being done to benefit CIRLA, other events we're doing in collaboration with a lot of really cool other organizations, and even upcoming opportunities to get involved in activism, like rallies and things of that nature. And I think Sophia also had some resources to share.
Yes, but how do you stay courageous in 20 seconds or less?
That's a good question. I think staying rooted in community, and for those of you who find power in the arts, staying engaged in the arts locally and in whatever capacity is meaningful to you.
Thank you. Sophia, same questions.
Yeah, I would just offer that publiccouncil.org has a lot of information on it about avoiding notario fraud. Notario fraud is huge. A lot of people are taking advantage of immigrants' desperation and offering false legal services. So if you want to learn more about avoiding notario fraud, visit our website, publiccouncil.org. And to stay courageous, definitely gain a lot from speaking to like-minded people, my coworkers, and other folks in the fight, and taking breaks and coming back so that I can continue to be renewed for the work.
Well, fabulous. Thank you so much to you both, Adam Reese from CIRLA and Sophia Wrench from Public Counsel. And Sophia has been a longtime volunteer of NLG as well, just to point that out. So both of them are so dedicated and doing amazing work, really inspiring me. And I know you inspired our listeners. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you both very much for your work and for your courage. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, we have just a couple of minutes left, I think, to try to convince you, our listeners, that the kind of programming you just heard is worthy of the airwaves. We don't find it anywhere else. We find it here on KPFK. That's where you get it. That's why you're probably listening today. We urge you to do a number of things. all of which have to do with making a phone call, because we want you to make a pledge. We want you to give us a call at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Any amount that you want to pledge is welcome, of course. But for $10 a month, you're a sustainer. That's only $120 a year. $10 a month is pretty modest for most people. You can make that pledge. What we're really hoping, and we're really pushing on this particular fund drive, is our $25 a month sustainer. Comes with a variety of premiums. That's, of course, $300 a year. We realize some people can't afford that. Maybe you're out of work or you're a student in school. We understand. Don't feel bad. Keep listening whether you can afford to contribute or not. But those of you who can afford and who haven't done so recently, you might want to feel a little guilty for not doing that. So without trying to hit too big a guilt trip on you, please consider supporting the station you listen to, because it's the only way we stay alive. We get no federal money. We don't take big corporate sponsorships like a lot of public radio stations do. That way we can tell it like it is. We don't have to be accountable to those corporations or worry about them taking away their money if we say something they don't like. So 818-985-5735 is the way to do it. As we often say here, we're the kind of the voice of the progressive, liberal progressive left movement, if you will, here in Los Angeles. The one radio station that consistently and constantly brings that message to the people of Los Angeles. And it only can do so because of support from people like you, our regular listeners. So do consider being one of the $25 a month sustainers. For a lot of you, that's something that you can well afford to do and won't notice from your budget at all. But it will mean a lot to us here at KPFK. Also, you can do the same. You can do a similar thing for $10 a month and be a sustainer. Tell us again about that wonderful book, Copaganda.
Yes. Well, Copaganda, the subtitle is How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News. Copaganda is a thank you gift for a gift for a donation of $100 or more. You can go on the website, kpfk.org, or just call 818-985-5735. And Copaganda, what is Copaganda, you asked? Well, that is a special kind of propaganda that the police, prosecutors, and their PR people, their public relations people, that's what they use, along with the news media. They feed them stories on a silver platter. The news media takes them and runs with them, and it stokes fear. It distorts all of our responses to it. It really affects how we all think. So what we need to do, this book gives a lot of examples of how we can stay independent-minded and how not to be manipulated by this propaganda out there. So one way is, of course, to support KPFK. It is not an accident that this is the perfect premium that we chose for this purpose, because propaganda is all about how do we stay independent and critically thinking, and how do we stay courageous? It's by hearing ideas that go with our gut, that go with what we're seeing, by not being gaslit by what we're seeing on the news, on the mainstream news. So Copaganda, again, it's a premium. If you give a donation of $100 or more, it also, if you make even a monthly pledge that adds up to $100 or more for the entire year, you can get that premium as well.
Uh-huh. Well, that's wonderful news. So don't let us down, folks. Please let us know you appreciate this show, that you appreciate KPFK. We're going to have to turn our microphone over to the next show now. But we thank you for listening today. Until next week, same time and place. Although I think next week we may be preempted for some more phone drives. But until we're back with you again, Jim Lafferty and Maria Hall thanking you so much for listening today, urging you to stay healthy, stay active, and certainly stand up for your rights, my friends. Heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. What I give you since you've asked is all my time together. This is Donna Walker. Join me on Friday, July 31st at 2 p.m. for a special fund drive edition of Pacifica Performance Showcase and Arts in Review, when I'll be joined by the legendary Judy Collins.
We'll talk about her Sweet Judy Blue Eyes farewell tour and her upcoming appearance at the Ford Amphitheater on Friday, August 7th at 8 p.m. Over six decades and across 55 iconic albums, Judy has inspired audiences with her sublime voice, sensitive songwriting, and powerful social activism. That's next Friday, July 31st at 2 p.m. Pacifica Performance Showcase, right here on KPFK, your favorite radio station. Tune in and pledge.